Many people in our food community have been seriously impacted by Superstorm Sandy, and our hearts go out to them. At HRN, we've been covering these stories since the storm hit. To learn more, visit our website at www.heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are Groundworks, Inc. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg, and my co-host, Carmen DeVito, is off today, taking a day of rest, which is very good. We miss you, Carmen. And our company, Groundworks, designs, installs, and maintains gardens in and around New York City. So We Dig Plants brings the culture to horticulture, and because it's Thanksgiving week, we thought it would be apropos to talk about the farmers that grow the food that we're celebrating. So today we have an amazing book and author, Richard Horan, and his new book, Harvest, An Adventure into the Heart of America's Family Farms. Richard, in this book, travels coast to coast, visiting organic farms and working on the harvests of more than a dozen essential or unusual food crops. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you very much, Alice.
Thanks so much for joining us from upstate New York.
Yes.
Richard is a novelist, an English teacher, and a book reviewer for several national publications. So, Richard, tell us about this book, Harvest, and what was the inspiration, and how did you come to pick the farms that you profiled?
Well, that's a mouthful to answer all of those, but let me start with what inspired me first. Wasn't feeling very good about the way the country was going. I'm actually a dual citizen, so I was considering moving back overseas, and I was working as a substitute teacher, not making much money, and one day I was sitting out in my car in the parking lot of Walmart and waiting for my daughter to purchase a cell phone that I couldn't afford, and I heard Arturo Rodriguez, the president of the United Farm Workers, on the radio being interviewed on NPR, and he was challenging Americans who were complaining about, illegal immigrants coming across the border and stealing their jobs, and he was challenging Americans to go out and apply for jobs as farm workers. They wanted to complain.
Right.
And so something about that just really resonated with me. My immigrant grandfather had a fruits and vegetables distribution company, and as a little kid, I spent a lot of time with him around fruits and vegetables. And there was just something about that idea of going around and being around the fruits and vegetables and participating in the harvest that inspired me.
Uh-huh.
And so I proposed this with the help from my agent and an editor friend of mine, and so HarperCollins decided to sponsor me, and so off I went. As far as how I came upon these wonderful national treasures that we call farmers, it was all serendipity. I wanted to harvest crops that I loved,
mm-hmm.
Fruits like peaches and oranges and peanuts and walnuts and cranberries and asparagus and all these vegetables. So I put a list together and just through serendipity found some names and addresses and sent out quite a lot of letters requesting that they allow me to come on their farm and work for free for about a week.
Right.
I told them this wasn't going to be a muckraking book.
Right.
And so I got responses, and each and every person who wrote back with glowing enthusiasm, that's where I ended up. Now, some of the crops I never did get a chance to harvest for one reason or another.
Right, because
of
timing and things.
I ended up harvesting about 13.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it's all in there, and each farm, each family farm was more inspirational and joyous than the next.
Did you have a gardening background at all or a farming background as you...
Yes, that's it. I have a gardening background.
Okay.
And that's it. There's a huge distinction to be made between gardening and farming.
Yeah.
And that was quite apparent even from the very beginning.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, what was most surprising to you about working on a farm versus working on your garden? Other than the harvest?
That's an excellent question, and I can answer that. I was amazed at the pace of the work.
Uh-huh.
As a gardener, there's no hurry. Time is not of the essence. And so when I'm out in the garden digging the soil or planting, I always feel very relaxed. And this is not the pace of things when it comes to harvest time. And I say this in my book, if it weren't for youth, there would be no farms.
Yeah.
You need speed, and you need energy and youth to get that product off the vine quickly and expeditiously.
Yeah,
and efficiently. So that was a big surprise for me. A 50-year-old man out there, and I'm good shape and everything, but I just was not prepared for the pace of the work.
Right. Right. Well, we often find the same thing in our, to draw a correlation, in our gardening world, we're landscape contractors, so time is money, and that's where I think we, and we're working outside and we're working with plants, but I think that's where it's very similar, and our gardeners have learned that it is a business and it's not relaxation. And you have to hump soil and you have to work hard and you have to, get physically dirty. But I think at the end of the day, that's what's most rewarding is that, wow, I've been paid for this and I feel like I did something instead of just sitting in some cubicle someplace.
Absolutely. You've hit upon the it of it all.
Yeah.
There's no greater feeling to be using your body and to be out in nature and pulling the fruits of your labor. And at the end of the day, much like teaching, and that's what I've done, you feel that good or bad, you've done a wonderful job because it's such important work.
Right. Well, you have this gorgeous description of a visible of what a farm looks like from page 72, and I'm going to read it here.
Wonderful.
And it reads, as I came over the hill, past the chickens, flowers, and berry bushes, the beauty of the rows of herbs and vegetables revealed itself to me as an elegant 5-acre script, growing there in long lines, living or like a living text, the varied rows of herbs and vegetables, each plant a letter, each row a phrase, presented a transcendent form of communication. All the glorious shapes and flavors, colors and odors, tastes and varieties expressed in line after line, the highest form of human achievement and human passion and human desire. Now, that's an amazing description to me, both of the visible farm, but also of the physical human hand at work. And that, art and science working together and the body and the mind engaged in nourishment, both the creation of nourishment and food and sustenance, but also the satisfaction of the nourishment towards the soul. So to me, that was just like that summed up everything about your book.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad you chose that particular line, that was a very strong moment for me, sort of an epiphany, where it did sort of come together for me. As you know, I think it was Jared Diamond who said back in 1987 that perhaps the greatest mistake in human history was agriculture. And you know, so I went out with that quote in mind, and it was at that point, I think, where I realized how utterly wrong he was.
Yeah, that's a crazy statement.
It is. But I, you know, he reduced it down when you think about what agriculture has done. You know, it has given us time to think and to ponder our existence, and then that's led to all sorts of mischief. But even on an environmental level, the idea that, you know, all of these poisons and all of this soil erosion and the global warming and so on and so forth is directly attributable to agriculture, which, you know, is the greatest, leaves the largest carbon footprint.
Right, sure.
But at the same time, I think it's, to the contrary, it's our greatest achievement, because with that, we've had other great, incredible advances in medical science and so on, the life expectancy,
right.
Even the increase of population. And I think it's our challenge to see now, okay, so we've reversed our hunter-gatherer sort of mean condition to something far more exalted, but can we live with ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
We have this wonderful food that we can grow and so on, you know. But can we do it sustainably? Can we make it to the next millennium?
Right. Well, what I also really loved about all of the profiles of all the different farms, I was kind of looking for themes, and. You know, you said there was a theme of youth, and there was also a theme of hope, obviously, in each farm. And there was also flexibility on behalf of the farmer that seemed to be apparent, and variety on the farm, organic versus an organic varied
right.
palette versus a monoculture. And then the idea of closed circle farming, which I really liked. That's where every portion of the farm is utilized to its
right.
10th degree. And I actually really like that. But I found that you kind of harvested your own, you had your own sort of harvest in this book, in that this visual description that I just read, that actually is it's such interesting prose if you just take it from a literary standpoint, because you're actually talking about communication, you know, and
right.
you've laid out a garden plan, but you've done it in a you know, a very, like, I don't know, like a English English class sentence recipe kind of format. That's kind
right.
of how I thought of it, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. Yeah, I just, it is a form of communication. It is a high art.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is everything glorious that we attribute to the word art and culture and ideas. And,
yeah.
And it's all out there on the farm. You know, I think they're very, just after I had that epiphany about the rows of vegetables and herbs and so on representing language and expressing meaning, I also had this epiphany that these family farms of ours, not only are they national treasures, but they've become like our cathedrals and churches,
uh-huh.
You know, of a different era, if we go back to the Renaissance or that sort of period.
Right.
You know, which was a period of high culture. Now, I look at these family farms as sort of these sepulchres, these great cathedrals and churches, and I see them becoming more and more you know, symbolic of all that's good and all that's full of hope. So
yeah.
There's definitely a new day coming here. We have a huge groundswell movement of young people moving and thinking along the terms of sustainability and greening and farming.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that was my purpose in setting out. I did not have a lot of good vibrations about living in America. And after that experience going around and participating in the harvests, you know, from the Ojibwe tribes up north and pulling off the sacred wild rice all the way out to the high plains of Kansas and participating in, you know, cutting organic turkey red wheat that had
right.
come over with the Mennonites.
So right.
I'm just joyous and very enthusiastic about the future of farming, especially in the United States.
Well, we do have to take a break, but thank you so much for joining us. Hang on to the line.
Okay,
we'll be right back. And this is our Thanksgiving show on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Bang Bang Sun by Iggy Dean on the heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network, and today we're talking Thanksgiving and family farms with author Richard Horan and his book Harvest. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Richard, tell us about the cranberry harvest. That was the most interesting story to me, I think because I'm fascinated with how they're harvested.
Well, I knew nothing about cranberry harvest whatsoever, and so the day we arrived, it was rather a wet day, and so we had planned to go to a small bog and help harvest there. But it was too wet to what's called dry harvest,
mm-hmm.
and so we immediately went over to another bog and participated in the wet harvest,
uh-huh.
which is really a fascinating and sensual sort of experience, especially visually.
Yeah.
You come in and the... into these bogs that have been flooded, and the berries are what's called rolled off. So there's a machine that the farmer drives across the bog, and it looks like the machine is actually floating on the water because it has these four very bald, large tires, so it looks like it's floating. But it's actually driving across the bog. And in the back, there's what's called a roller, and they upset the berries and they loosen them, and they float to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only difficulty there is they have to the farmer has to make sure he knows where he's rolled, or he's just going to go around and around, not know exactly
right.
where he was before. So they put these sophisticated markers down. I couldn't really follow how he did it. But nonetheless, when that's all done, they put a boom around those cranberries, and then they tighten that. So
uh-huh.
it's this visual that I was certain that who was it? Trying to think of the pointillism, the famous impressionist artist who did Sureau, I believe it.
Uh-huh.
Who I was certain must have gone and visited a cranberry bog during harvest season, because as you look down, it's all sort of these small little reds and yellows, and you can see faces and weird shapes and,
right.
and things in the water and in the cranberries. So anyway, So that's quite a visual display. It's very bright red and pink and yellow, and they tighten that boom around this big pond, you know, that's probably 2 acres. And then they have another machine that's 2 stories high that sucks those cranberries up, and it separates the good cranberries from the bad cranberries. And there are some sophisticated contraptions within that machine that can tell the difference between the two.
Right.
I guess the good berries bounce and the bad berries don't.
Uh-huh.
And so that was just an amazing experience to be out there and pushing those berries around in that bog. And also to know that the machines that are used are all made by what they call themselves cranberry men.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all made by the cranberry men themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're all these engineers and mechanical, they're very, very smart people. And the reason that they have to make the machines themselves is because the industry is just not big enough to support, a manufacturing
right,
end of it.
Right, right. You'd have, how many clients would you have if you were in that business?
Yeah, exactly. So, Carver, Massachusetts. I guess they build themselves the cranberry capital of the world. And then the next day we participated in what's called the dry harvest, which is completely different.
Uh-huh.
It's a much smaller scale. And they have these machines, again, that the cranberry men have made for themselves. And they're exactly like sideburn trimmers, only, maybe 100 times the size.
Mm-hmm.
So you push them along like a lawnmower. And so this trimmer goes through this bog, and it cuts off or it releases the berries, and then the berries go up a conveyor belt, and then you collect them in a burlap sack. And then when the sack is maybe half full, you take it off, you put another one on. And
right.
It's very slow, meticulous work. But again, it's a totally different process. Those cranberries that are dry harvested are usually ones you buy in the packages.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are wet harvested are usually made into jellies and into the can. Drink.
Right. Or
yes.
The can, that you suction out of the can for Thanksgiving.
Yes,
Day.
Yes.
Well,
take on the shape of the can.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. You get the ridges, right. Well, the thing that also resonated for me a lot in your book was we were talking earlier about the themes and flexibility. And, as a farmer, I think you're really jack of all trades. You are engineer, you're mechanic, you're artist, you're, because you're doing garden design, basically, planting design. Then you're a businessman because you have to sell and you have to, negotiate. And it's just amazing what the farmer ends up doing for a lot of money,
Yeah, you've got that right. On those 2 points right there, you asked me what I was struck me right away. Well, first I said it was the youth and the pace of things.
Right.
But I think the second thing that took me by surprise was the quality of these people. They're all Renaissance men and women.
Yeah.
They can do anything and everything. They can make and fix machines. They can create machines. Yeah, as you said, they can run businesses. They can write. I mean, I look at my friend Jim Gerritsen, the Maine potato farmer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a Renaissance man if ever there was one.
Mm-hmm.
He writes and speaks like Abraham Lincoln, and he runs a seed potato company. He fixes his machines. There's nothing that these people can't do, it seems.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that was the other, the third idea that really hit me square between the eyes was the idea that these are not rich people. No one is getting rich farming.
No.
It's not about money. And isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, exactly. The thing that was also, I loved your writing in this book because you were very self-deprecating. And I found a lot of humor in your description of the personalities and the outlooks of each farm and farmer and family that you met and the personal perspectives that you kind of engaged yourself with, and how those perspectives kind of played out in each farm, and the idea of what goes around comes around, you know?
Yes. Well, these are amazing people. I almost look at them all like family now when I talk about my farmers. But I'm serious about that when I say that. Think about it. I wrote them a letter, and most of the letters I wrote were left unresponded to. But the ones who responded invited me into their home.
Yeah.
And they let me sleep with them and eat in their homes,
uh-huh.
and they took care of me, and they didn't, they didn't ask to see my references, or
right,
they didn't
right.
vet me in any way.
Right.
These are amazing people who, you know, when I arrived, they welcomed me to their life and to their farms and family, just as if I were an old friend.
Yeah.
So these are the types of people that I met, one right after the other. There wasn't one farmer who acted or treated me differently than any of the others. I was a member of the family.
Right, right. And also just the community of people that you were harvesting with, some of the other seasonal workers, those were quite some funny relationships.
Yes.
You know,
it definitely is a great fraternity when you're out there in the field and you're working hard and you're... You know, harvesting, you're not getting paid a great deal of money, but you know that you're doing something special. And
sweaty and you're getting mosquito bites and you're itchy and
right.
scratchy and, you know, but it's amazing. It's the best work.
Yes, I agree. It was so inspirational that my oldest daughter, she turned around and... just finished, in fact, an internship on an organic farm in Hamilton, New York.
Oh, nice.
Almond Thread farm up in Hamilton. And she was there for 8 months after she had participated just once when we went up to Maine and harvested the potatoes. But she was so, moved and inspired by that experience that she turned around and did the organic farming
right.
herself.
So let me go back and talk a second about literature and your passion as well as farming, your newfound passion. So tell us about your fascination and the intersection of literature writing and horticulture, because this is your second book. The first book was titled Seeds, and that was actually pretty fascinating too, because that was a series of essays, I guess, based on trees and writers, right?
Right, I went around the country and I collected the seeds. I harvested the seeds from the trees of my favorite
authors.
Childhood authors' homes.
Right.
And I'm still working on that project, actually. We have 175 trees growing in upstate New York. The president of the New York State Arborist Association is now in charge of the program. But he's, you know, growing Helen Keller water oaks and William Faulkner Osage oranges and... Ken Kesey maples and Jack Kerouac maples and so on. So that was my way, again, of physically connecting with those authors. So I was, I went around and gathered the seeds of these trees that actually had contact with these great immortal writers and people.
Right, right.
You know, that was something as a creative writer that my creative instincts just came up with that idea and off I went with it. But it is that sort of ability to connect literature and to inspire people to act. When I teach my students about, you know, what is it that writers ultimately desire most from their reader, and it is that he or she wants to inspire that reader to act.
Right.
And so I've found now getting away from fiction, which was my first two books, in writing nonfiction books, I can take my fiction writing skills, put it into the nonfiction to to inspire people to get up and do something.
Right.
Something that's meaningful to you, that's going to inspire you and enrich your life.
Well, and that yeah. again is a theme in this Harvest book, because you were talking about action on a farm, and that a farm doesn't exist without action. And
right.
And you know, like a farm is as good as its workers, basically, is what you were
right.
saying in several instances in this book. So again, that idea of youth and generation and what we can all accomplish if we act together, you know, and,
right.
and harvest
right.
together in the
and
harvest.
That's what the writers want. You
yeah.
know, I start often by talking about Nikolai Gogol, the great Russian writer, who died by starvation because he was so depressed that his books had not inspired a revolution.
Right.
Well,
right.
we know that 30 years later, after he died, it did. But
right.
That's the power of the written word that that writers often believe in, and
mm-hmm.
And that people who read believe in.
Uh-huh.
That this is a prime mover. These words that are on the page. It's not just meant to be, you know, read on the beach.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yes, I've been very lucky that I've had this opportunity to take my ideas, my creativity, put it into from the fiction realm,
mm-hmm.
you know, into the actual real realm, the
mm-hmm.
nonfiction realm, and.
Well,
and I'm hoping that there are many thousands of people out there gathering seeds from the trees that inspired them, and that also there are people out there who want to get to know their farmer and maybe go and help in the harvest sometime.
Yeah. Well, your book Harvest is much more than about the harvest. I mean, it's about the harvest, but it's about harvest on a personal internal sense as well, and the growth, you know, pardon the pun, of one's being and also one's food, and you know, it's just a beautifully written book, and I encourage everybody to pick it up and read, because it's funny, it's serious, and you are inspiring other people and generations, and I think we're so disconnected from the land, and that's what your stories do, is it brings back what we all should be engaged in, I think. It's a beautiful book.
Well, thank you very much, Alice. I appreciate that.
Okay, one final question for you.
Okay.
After all of your visits, where do you see the future of these family farms and organic farms headed?
Oh, as I said, I think these are... there's a groundswell movement. These are iconic. I believe the next generation is going to seek out farming as a way of life, and they're going to seek out farmers as mentors and as role models, and so I'm really sanguine about the future of farming, particularly organic farming on family farms.
Great, great. Well, thank you for joining us. You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you so much, Richard Horan, for joining us in your book, Harvest, An Adventure into the Heart of America's Family Farms by HarperCollins, and for sharing your travel and farming experiences. Thanks to Jack Inslee for producing and to Joe G for engineering. Happy Thanksgiving and happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.